Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
To the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text me. 251-343-0106. Still to come on the program, Paul DeMarco. That's about a half hour away, so make sure you stay tuned for that, and Dale Jackson from WVNN Yellhammer News in the 11 o'clock hour, a little deviation from his normal 10:30 time, but we had to kind of clear the deck for Paul, who's got, some important business with the judicial branch of the state government here. I want to get back to these texts because there are a ton here, and we'll try to expedite these. Martin, KIV Library, hours of operation, not listed in the shelves inside are bare. Well, there may be, what would be in the KIV Library? Not like all the footage of all the press conferences she gave. That could take up like, not very much space. Dr. Scott Harris and Kay Ivey, the dynamic duo, Alabama's Fauci, but maybe that's a little harsh. I don't know. All those interviews she did with Matt Murphy and Andrea Lindenberg, just shelves of that. Todd Stacey. Let's see here. Unnamed texture to Guy Hot Library is about the only thing in Holly Pond that isn't rotting or looks the same as it did 30 years ago. Driving between Holly Pond, Hansville, Fairview makes you wish that eastern half of Coleman County would be hit by a nuclear weapon. That's a little harsh. And there's nothing really remarkable or unremarkable about it. I don't know. It's I've driven through there a few times. There's not, I mean, you got to be going from like Gadsden to Coleman or something of that sort. To really know what you're speaking of there. But I don't know. It's just, it might as well be Blount County or Marshall County or whatever. But there is a Guy Hunt Library. I need to visit this someday. I'm going to put that on my bucket list just to say I have. And we'll do a full report of it when the time comes. Joel! Joel with a lot to say this morning. I got to figure this out. Let's see. We began at 9:41. If you think that Bay Bridge, for whatever reason, is going to be free after it's built and paid for, you've lost your damn mind. And think how hard it's going to get through and backed up and jammed up for ways that around it, you don't pay the almost $8 one way. It's going to be a freaking cluster. By the way, the Bankhead Tunnel didn't cost $34 million in 1974. It was 25 cents to go through the damn thing. Y'all, come on, people. I'm sorry, 1941, and ended in 1973. And that would be $91 million of today's money from 1941, $4 million. Yeah, so what? That was 32 years. So 2060 something. I'll be in my 90s if the toll goes away. If it's based on that time scale, that the same time scale as the Bankhead Tunnel. What you don't want in Alabama, and we gotta really buckle down on this. This is the way they do it in northern states. They use their toll system to supplement their transportation funding. That if you're on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, for example, and a lot of traffic going through Pennsylvania on the Turnpike, and it's like more than $100 to go the entirety of the Pennsylvania Turnpike. from Ohio all the way to Philadelphia or whatever it is. And they use that money, and they do this, and they really do this in New York City. But they take money from the toll that was intended to pay for that road that you're traveling on and use it to supplement other roads around their state, or the Commonwealth, I should say. We don't need that. We need to make sure that doesn't happen. That they look at the toll bridge that the state does and says, you know what? It's making so much money. Let's just toll it for 100 years, and then we'll take the revenue from the tolls that people from Louisiana, Texas, et cetera, are paying Florida, and we'll use it to build a bridge in DeKalb County. We'll use it to build roads in other parts of the state. I still think that they're going to, they're still waiting out for the flying car. Ultra Runner, why is this the first LDOT project that people that can't be funded like all the previous projects? What makes us so special? The state is spending $1.1 billion. Well, it's going to be $1.4, I'm told, when it's all said and done, on the West Alabama corridor. But just $300 million on the bridge, about 25%. I wonder what Hoover residents would say if you charged them a $720 annual toll to go back and forth to Birmingham. Yeah, I mean, that road over Shades Crest and Red Mountain probably wasn't cheap, was it? This is the problem with Alabama. And historically, it's always been this way, guys. We might as well, in the eyes of some Alabamians, not this isn't universal. We might as well be in Venezuela. That's the beach. That's like tropical paradise. I mean, literally, guys, growing up in Shelby County, living in Huntsville for a year and a half, almost 2 years, living all over this state. I've lived in Jackson County. I've lived in Lee County. Lived in Madison County. I've lived in Shelby County. Lived in Jefferson County. Mobile's the beach. Mobile, Alabama. You guys out on Airport Boulevard right now. Here's a beach. That's their perception. It's coastal. You're doing Jimmy Buffett and margaritas. It's the beach. We're not like geographic pros in the state. And it's that, I guess maybe it's just that long drive between Montgomery and Mobile on 65. But it's everything south of the Dolly Parton Bridge is the beach. We're all eating seafood all the time. There's probably very little reason for someone from, I don't know, Anniston to spend a lot of time in Mobile. But in their mind, they look at the map, they see the blue next to Mobile. It's the beach. And I would dare say I think lawmakers are that way too. Tim, Jeff, how did we get taken for a ride on the road Ivy is building? Did it get voted on or did ALDOT push it through? They don't have to. I mean, here's what happened. Your Alabama legislature in 2019 was very, very gung-ho on this Rebuild Alabama Act that raised your gas taxes. And they are increased in perpetuity. They don't even have to vote on it. They have decided to peg the fuel tax to a construction material index that changes. So if construction materials go up, that price per gallon on the gas tax goes up. And they left in the language of the bill the ability to borrow against it for economic development projects. This governor knew what she was doing all along. She knew what she was doing. She knew what it was past, if she would get in deep into her second term, She had to do all the hard work. She had to put up the whiteboard with the black mark, red mark, and green mark next to it. She wasn't going to leave a dime of that to be spent for future governors. And this is what they chose to do. It wasn't widen 65 Main Street, Alabama. It wasn't to build this I-10 bridge. It's got to be done. Even if you don't think it's serving the entirety of the state, it's still got to be done. It wasn't to widen I-85, all that traffic going to and from Atlanta. Or I-20 and I-65 north of Birmingham got widened over the years. No, it was to build this, like, oddball project. It's got some merit, but I'm not sure how much merit it has. People are taking U.S. Highway 45. They're taking the interstate down to Meridian, and then they're zipping on down to Washington County on 45 and crossing into Mobile that way. It's not going to change Marengo County. It's not going to change Clark County. 43 is four lane all the way up to Clark County, all the way to Thomasville, all the way to the 543 split. And then 43 is going to get widened to right outside of Linden, where the Linden Bypass will begin. And the Linden Bypass will connect to State Route 69. So it's not a 43 widening project. State Route 69, it connects Marengo County, right south of Linden, to Tuscaloosa. If you've ever been to Tuscaloosa, it's the Moundville exit. So you'll be coming in on that four-lane road right into Tuscaloosa right there, University Boulevard. And Tuscaloosa's kind of grown out that way. That's what's going to happen. They're going to build a bypass around Linden. They're building this big overpass over Highway 80 there. 80 sort of the main east-west corridor. And then they're going to continue it on around Greensboro. They're going to build a bypass there. Then it's going to go connect on into Moundville and a Moundville bypass, I assume, and then into Tuscaloosa. She must have owed somebody some big favors. But what she did was she used the law, and maybe not the spirit of the law, but the technical definition, she could borrow against it for 20 years. The next three administrations are now hamstrung to build anything because she maxed out the credit card. Which is not something conservatives do. So she's never going to be known as being a conservative. But my guess, this road gets done, it's not going to get a dime of any funding to repair it, to upgrade it. It's just going to deteriorate. People have a real, real, real bad taste in their mouth from the way that this was handled. Tim. Hi, Jeff. Regarding the West Alabama Corridor Project, have you noticed a massive quantity of caution barrels? Someone in Aldot must have had a family member that sells caution barrels. Well, I think they lease them, right? I'm sure that's figured into the cost, but maybe so. They're doing a lot of repaving on 43 between here and where that road's supposed to begin, so that probably has something to do with it as well. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean.
Hi, I'm Lucio with Scotts Marine. We don't just sell boats. We help you find the perfect boat for how you want to enjoy the water, whether that's weekend cruising, fishing, or creating family memories. Scotts Marine on Highway 98 in Alberta. Stop by and let's find the right boat for you.
Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk. 106.5, thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0995. 0106 Paul DeMarco up in the next segment. So you want to make sure you stick around for that. Let's keep rolling here. Mike, whether it's roads, government schools, or prisons, it seems that our state has always used it as a jobs program in order to take from the productive portions of the state and prop up unproductives. Especially with, I guess, with prison. I mean, that was the sin of the Wallace administration when the federal judge, or Judge Johnson, told, told the Wallace administration, you got to do something about your prisons. And he resisted, and then finally he lost, and then they made it a jobs program. And that's why you have all of these prisons in Bullock and Barber County now. They're soon to go away, but that was a relic of the Wallace era in Alabama. And in the schools, yes, the AEA, the teachers union, I mean, one of the best paying jobs in some rural parts of Alabama is school teacher. As a jobs program. And then roads, roads just don't seem like a permanent jobs program. Once the construction's over, then what? I mean, if you build it, they will come. That's just not always true. On the texture, I'm reluctant to say this, however, I don't see any other avenue for South Alabama road projects put out that under legislative control. It's like that in a lot of places, that somehow the executive branch has commandeered this. This is a very powerful thing. I think there needs to be some kind of legislative oversight over road construction. Oh, you don't want to do that. You'll intermingle politics and road construction. So what? At least the public has some recourse. I suppose the recourse they had now would be just you elect the governor sets the policy. But this bond issue for the West Alabama corridor caught all these guys off guard. At least that's what they're saying. There's a lot of money that was bonded to pay for this. And the legislature had no say. And I mean, how many of you grew up in understanding civics and government that the legislative branch has the purse strings? Well, not in this case. They had no say. At least that's what they're telling us. Jason, good morning, Jeff. Is it possible a better advocate for Mr. Stringle could get some traction on the 45 project, or is that just hopeless for now? Yeah, this is a longstanding tradition, Jason, in Alabama of not building four-lane highways and state lines. You can just look around the state. Those are the roads that are always last that connect to other four-lane roads. So Georgia, Tennessee, certainly Mississippi, maybe not as much Florida, but you'll see four-lane roads that just kind of dead end at the state line and go to two lanes. And then we, as a matter of transportation policy, really focus insularly, not about the traffic going and coming from Alabama, but the traffic within Alabama. It's a policy decision, but I think it's sort of a rule sometimes. Unnamed texter, Johnny Wetstar, Maverick McCain, and obsessed with the media. I think he was really comfortable having to kowtow to the Limbaugh Hannity cartel. His vote of Obamacare was pure hubris and harmed the country in ways we don't like to discuss. Josh, K Ivy Library will certainly have a donation box, which will get you a no big contract of some sort. Toothless Bammer says Eli Gold. Derek. We are still laying fiber optic cable lines across the state too? Yes. The skim will come from the lay fees. That's where the money is. Probably so. We got to really watch this. Greg, why can't all the tax revenue for the beach and the port count for Mobile Baldwin County tolls? And if you don't have an Alabama tag, then you get a toll. There's a federal law that keeps you from just charging out of state traffic. Other states have tried this before. they've tried to do that, and the federal government said, no, this is a federal highway where federal dollars are being used. You can't do that. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
On the old town square, under the barbershop pole, they set me up in the chair.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. Need to be in touch with the program. You know what to do. Hit me up on that text line and we'll do our best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. Joining us now on the line, show regular here, Paul DeMarco. Paul, yes, the Guy Hunt Library and Museum. He thought we were joking here, but it is really a real thing.
I have not been there. I have not been to, I think I've been through Holly Pond for some reason. And I actually met Guy Hunt on a couple occasions. I actually went to his office one day and said, hey, I'd like to meet the governor. And that could not have been any nicer. Let me in. And I had a little talk with him. There was no, you're not going to get to meet the man. So, that was quite a time in history. If you all the election, the whole election, and then everything that transpired. So, when he got elected,
and the reason he came up was this, that so Tabitha Eisner, I don't know if you know her or not. She is the vice chairwoman of the Alabama Democratic Party, and she gets on social media this weekend, and she's telling, I guess Friday night, and says that Democrats need to vote in the August 11th Republican primaries. And, you know, this just, you know, you cannot, the proponents of closed primaries in this state cannot have asked for a better gift than that. But the Guy Hunt thing came up because your friend Chris Pringle on the floor of the House, like, really went after him, warning that if we go in this direction, I mean, you could have more Guy Hunts, and he couldn't even, when he was nominated as the Republican nominee, he couldn't even use a knife and a fork, apparently. They had to send him off to a special school of knife and fork learning in Atlanta, Georgia. But I kind of reject that. I think that this is, you know, no matter what people say, this is something that they got to get figured out if we keep hearing these kinds of things.
Well, you're right. When this bill comes back up, and the bill will talked about in the committee, and we talked about on the floor, that the Democrats are actually, and in just rumor, it's like about voter fraud. Oh, there's no voter fraud. Then we hear case after case about someone being, you know, prosecuted for voter fraud. It has happened. It happened. And I mean, don't other states have closed primaries? I mean, and it seems to work out there well, right? I mean, it seems to work in other states. I think I get back to, there's some other states that are able to do things like, well, we can't do it here. I mean, we're not.
Well, the reason for not doing it's just flimsy to me. Like, are you afraid that you're going to lose some votes if they close off primaries and you'll have a more conservative challenger, which I would think is probably the reason, but they're afraid to say that. But you know, this isn't just like somebody's Facebook post or whatever that Whatley tried to use. This is like the number two with the Alabama Democratic Party steering Democrats to go vote in a Republican primary.
Well, and I think the next question is, obviously it died in the Senate, and we don't have enough time on the air to talk about it, but, you know, which seats were they concerned about that where someone would lose? I mean, I actually had a conversation with a Alabama State Senator recently about this, and I'm you know which Senate seats were folks worried about that they would lose if you did this, and I think that's part of the question is protecting some incumbent, but which incumbent was in danger if you went there, and I think that's the reality of it.
I dare say this, especially in Jefferson County, I think you might have had some incumbents not lose their primaries had you had closed primaries potentially, because I think Dan Roberts and Jim Carnes, that outcome might have been a little different if they had had the criteria for that.
You might be right there, and that's why I think this conversation will come up again. Now, again, January or 27 organizational session, and come, I guess, March, there are going to be so many issues that come up. Will this make it, you know, will this make it through the House again? And then what happens in the Senate? Like I said, you'll have some new senators there, but you know, what will be the status of this bill? But with her coming out and saying that, I mean, this you can't say that it's just rumor mill or that it doesn't happen.
This isn't really a thing. And well, the thing that me and Todd Stacion, he talked about this, and then the fear. And he says this is a bad thing. It's just going to get a bunch of right-wing extremists if we close the primaries. Well, I mean, like, elections have consequences. And you could vote against these right-wing extremists in a general election if you so choose. So, like, the Republican Party is a private organization, and it needs to function like that and not – it doesn't exist for the public to, electioneer or whatever.
I think every race, you look at every race on an individual basis. I don't think if you close the primaries, it's going to be the extreme that folks may be talking about, because you already looked in most primaries. I mean, again, it's on a case by case basis, and it's really that election, those candidates, as opposed to who's the most. Now, look, we've seen it before. I mean, look at the U.S. Senate race. Katie Britt won that race, and I think some folks were, well, Mo Brooks was – that didn't work. No, Katie Britt was successful and was connected with the voters, even though they tried to say, you know, we're going to – you know, Mo Brooks, usually the most conservative.
Right.
Katie Britt was able to connect and say, I am a conservative and I'm going to do the best job as the senator, and she won.
And she went to 67 counties twice. She pounded the pavement. She did the blocking and tackling. It wasn't because you had some rogue Democrats vote in that 2022 U.S. Senate primary.
No.
I never bought that argument, but I do think – you got to keep the Republican primary Republican and the Democratic primary Democrat, you know?
Well, and that's a good point. Republicans elected Katie Britt. The Democrats who were going to vote for Doug Jones didn't elect Katie Britt. It was Republicans, and that's why she's so popular in the Republican Party. Yeah. So it wasn't Doug Jones Democrats supporting Katie Britt over Mo Brooks. That was Republicans in all 67 counties.
You had, if I recall, you had a Democrat Party employee. Remember, they flirted with a post Joe Reed era at the Alabama Democratic Party, and they had Chris England as chairman, and it didn't really work out for them. But you had one of the staffers encouraging Democrats to go out and vote for Katie Britt. And that set off a firestorm that was like for 10 minutes. But I don't really think that was really part of this. I think that, you know, she just won because she was a better candidate.
Exactly. And that's why I don't use that as an argument that, oh, you're going to get the most far right when, you know, you've seen time after time again. Look who's getting elected. And it does. I look, clearly when you say, okay, the Republican Party, everybody's, you know, who wants to campaign and say, hey, we're the most conservative in the race.
Well, this is this is the Pringle argument, to be fair. And I'm going to lay it out because I'm sure he's probably shaking his fist at me right now or somebody on his behalf. But that if the Republican Party tries to, like, micromanage its primary, then there will be a revolt in the general election. And Republicans will vote for the Democrat candidate, and you'll get a Democrat who's not qualified for office as a state office holder.
I mean, again, as a good lawmaker will say, well, let's look across the country and what states are doing this, and what are the results in those other states? I mean, that's what I would always, I mean, look, you got 49 other states. Does this work or not work? Doesn't Florida have closed primaries?
They do, but they don't like the Florida idea. The Republicans in charge don't, because it takes power away from the party to disqualify candidates. So, for example, if the way it works now, the steering committee can, you know better than I would, they can meet and they can reject someone's eligibility to be on the ballot as a Republican. And if you go the Florida direction, then you don't have that protection in place by the party anymore.
Right. Well, I mean, clearly there's a way for Alabama. I mean, you can look at what other states, I mean, where, you know, there's all this discussion about taxes and, you know, what's Alabama going to do when it comes to the property tax and income tax and grocery tax. Every state has to look at their individual solution to how they handle their policies. And it may be similar, but there's no question that we can look in our state to say, "How? What is our version of this when it comes to our elections?"
Right. And I think, tell me, like, you're kind of good with that fail-safe protection where someone pays a qualifying fee and then it turns out that they either ran as a Democrat or like financially supported Democrats or whatever, having them tell the party, telling them, you know, it's just, you're going to have to sit out your 6 years or whatever.
Yeah. And look, the voters pay attention. I mean, I've seen it time and time again, like, you know, every race is unique. Every race is different. So, I mean, I think if the voters in a Republican primary and in some legislative race, and this clearly was a person coming in, I think the voters would say, wait a second, in a Republican primary, this isn't the guy or girl who's going to best represent our values in Montgomery. That's the way I do want to trust the voters at the end of the day that they will get it right. And I think that's a part of the problem in Montgomery is sometimes we just don't trust the people enough back home on some of these issues.
They're so solely focused on their own race and their preservation of their office and, you know, whatever it takes to eat the path of least resistance a lot of times, which is fine, but there's consequences from that, you know, and you know, not allowing Democrats to vote in a Republican primary doesn't seem like that big of an ask.
And again, if you look at each legislative race, I think usually, sometimes they don't. I've seen it on both sides. Usually the voters get it right. Again, we've seen cases where I wouldn't have gone with that one. But I really do want to trust the folks back home when it comes to these issues, criminal justice issues, tax issues, education. You know, let the voters back home say, okay, hey, look, if this person is running in the Republican and they're not, then they'll get it right.
Yeah, well, it's ultimately up to the voters. But when there's mischief, when there's Operation Chaos, as the late Rush Limbaugh tried to in 2008, yeah. Right?
But
Now, welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. We got a little board crashed here, so we are dealing with that. Paul, we still got you here?
Yes, I don't know what happened.
It was a technical snafu here, but we got it fixed. Yeah, but we are going back to leaving the power to voters. The voters knowing the right thing to do, as you said, but I still think that you have to take some actions here, right?
If you have registered voters, I'm confident that in a Republican Party primary, if someone who is not or chooses to run in that party that's not been a party, then the Republican Party voters will get it right. That's what I'm saying is you can have those closed primaries and trust that the voters will say, okay, if somebody's in there, that they'll get it right. That's my point.
Yeah. Hey, real quick before we get out of here and get to a break, Lindsey Graham, anything noteworthy you were going to remember him for?
Isn't it interesting the relationship the President Trump relationship? The first it was and then became one of his strongest allies. And I guess that's when you look back at the history of Donald Trump, and Lindsey Graham was one of them. You know that the amount of disagreement then turned out to be one of his, would you say, top, along with Senator Tuberville, one of his top allies in the U.S. Senate, despite being completely, it's just interesting. But, you know, he clearly was one of the most vocal. You see him the most. So it's going to be interesting what happens. South Carolina is a very, very similar state to Alabama. What happens in South Carolina? Do they put in, you know, now that he's gone, and what that means to the Senate, and what does South Carolina, what does the governor do, and who does that mean replaces him in a very close election year? And you add this, and that wasn't going to be a factor.
Yeah, because I think that's all eyes are going to be on that. Because I mean, you know, potentially ideologically could be an upgrade, but it just depends on how voters show up in that election. Hey, Paul, folks want to find you online. Where can they look?
On X, Paul_DeMarco.
Paul, we appreciate your time. Thanks for hopping on this morning.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth.
Hello, Kansas. We feel farmer. Let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living. Just to send it on down the line.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. We're going to grab some text here. Squirrel Vereen. I lived in the northern part of the state. Never heard anyone talk about Mobile for Mardi Gras. Going to Mobile for Mardi Gras. They just talked about Gulf Shores and the Sea and, with their Sea and Sun shirts. Having lived in Anniston, I unfortunately had a connection to Mobile. But, yeah, and that was always, like, just a perception. It was just like it's the beach. And that perception would apply to politics and statewide elections. Really does damage. It's just you guys down here in your beach lifestyle, you're all wearing Hawaiian shirts. Whereas, like, because Gulf Shores, Orange Beach, Foley, et cetera, Mobile is the same thing. Where are you going? I'm going to Mobile. Really? We're at Mobile, Foley. No, that's not quite right. But, would you say that if you're going? I guess not. I mean, Tuscaloosa is about as far away as Birmingham is from Mobile to Orange Beach. Tim. Jeff, how did we get taken for a ride? Let's see. She must own somebody's big favor. She runs as a conservative, but she's really an old blue dog Democrat. Yeah, there's just a tradition in the state that Republican was, I mean, that was Civil War and Reconstruction, Abraham Lincoln, and Democrats ran the state. And we haven't really defined. We're going through this, and we're in the latter stages of it, but defining what Republican and Democrat mean. It's the party asphyxiation, when they put it to your name on the ballot, it doesn't necessarily mean as much. I just say, like, for example, like the Republican Party, I mean, the Speaker of the House, ran as a Democrat, lost that House seat, qualifies to run a Republican ballot, barely gets the votes on the steering committee to run as a Republican, and then slowly but surely, you know, DeKalb County, Republican, and he wins that seat, and then he works his way up through the ranks to become Speaker. Now, a lot of the saga post-Hubbard had something to do with that. There was a leadership vacuum, and, Mac McCutcheon and Ledbetter had the smart people who knew how to rally or whip votes, let's say, to win a leadership election. That's what happened. No one was expecting Nathaniel Ledbetter to be House Majority Leader when that election was going down. But here you have it, this guy who just barely made it, qualified to run as a Republican, now is the Speaker, one of the top Republicans in the state. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Dream of growing up to ride.
on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind, but Mama tried.